Cuomo News Radio, everything you need to know. Now, Newsline with Ken Schramm.
Good afternoon. 6 minutes after 12, Elisa Jaffe in this week for Ken Schramm. Can you feel it? Can you feel it in the air? It's heating up. And boy, it's going to get a lot hotter as the week progresses. Temperature is going to climb into the 90s. That's not helping things right now with that fire that's burning out of control near Clay Ellum. I hear that the winds might be dying down and there might be a little bit cooler conditions that could help things out, but it's pretty rough. Cuomo 4's Luke Ducey is at the scene of this wildfire that is now close to 30,000 acres, about the size of Tacoma. What can you tell us, Luke, about what's happening there today?
You know, well, I think weather is the big story right now. And that was the story literally, at least about an hour ago or so, that we had humidity overnight, which helped quell this fire that was still burning pretty much out of control, according to state officials. And then we had the cooler temperatures and no wind, but just in the last hour or so, the wind has picked back up. It's shifting direction on us. Sometimes we can smell the smoke coming into our face. Sometimes it's going away from us. And just in the last hour, we've seen these giant plumes of smoke that we haven't seen before in areas that we haven't seen before, just dotting the different ridge lines where we are, really kind of in the heart of everything. Far enough away from the front lines, we're not in danger. We're not interfering with any kind of fire activity, but it's getting bad. And, you know, state officials said today is the day because they had that humidity overnight and the cooler temperatures. They have got to get some kind of handle on this, or it really could get worse. And it looks like, you know, it's already heating up, and it is getting bad.
But they've only been able to contain about 10% of it, or has it gotten any better?
No better than that. 10% is still the official word, and that's just, you know, 10% of the fire is, they've got a line in that area where they don't think it can go beyond that line. And the way I've seen the wind shifting, you know, I'm not the expert here, and they do have fire behaviorists here who study these things, these patterns, and figuring out, trying to anticipate where it's going. You know, but by the wind shifts that we can tell, it blows one way and the other. This thing has been so unpredictable from the beginning. Even if the wind is blowing it one direction, and mostly the last day and a half it's been toward the southeast, that doesn't mean that it can burn the opposite direction against the wind. It just means that it burns more slowly. You know, 500 people have been evacuated. That's the official number this morning. Another latest call is about 70 homes have been destroyed in the area. And along those lines, though, we've seen the work these firefighters have been doing. And not only have, you know, it's bad numbers, 70 homes destroyed, all those families hurting, but firefighters have been working hard and they've saved hundreds of other homes. So it's hard work out here.
You mentioned those behaviorists, fire behaviorists who are watching and predicting what could happen. Are they the ones who are saying this could threaten, this fire could threaten to jump over Interstate 90?
Yeah, at first, you know, early this morning, there were reports that it could, and then we heard firefighters backing off saying, no, you know, we think we have that in hand pretty well. This is because the fire yesterday jumped over Highway 10, which is runs parallel to I-90, and then it jumped the Yakima River. About 3 hours ago, my photographer Thomas Lynn and I were down in the area near Thorpe, at the Thorpe fruit stand, you know, the mm-hmm. produce stand. It is pretty famous. And we were sitting there with people who've been evacuated, watching their houses over this small little ridge line next to I-90, wondering if their houses were on fire. And I'll tell you, the fire at that point was only 300 yards, three football fields away from I-90. It was right there.
And you could see it. What is that like, Luke, as you're driving along and you see these conditions? And you don't even have a home there.
I know. I'll be honest with you, especially in the early morning and late at night, it's beautiful. You look up and you see these dots of orange glow, and it's really pretty. There's something pretty about fire in the daytime too. And the moment you see it, you think, wow, that's really neat. And then you immediately start thinking, oh my goodness, it's doing so much damage. And then you start thinking about, oh, I hope that isn't someone's house or home. You start thinking about yourself and your own family and what that would mean. And we've seen so many people already trying to return to their house and returning to their homes. Some just saying that they have nothing left. You know, they evacuated with what they could take, and to return to see that everything you've worked for is just gone in an instant. It must be something.
And I know the Red Cross is there helping out some of those families. What else do they need from us? A lot of donations pouring in, I would hope.
A lot of donations are pouring in, and there are a lot of, you know, chat lines, message boards. There are people from all over the area and all over the country, really, who are just what do you need? What does that area need? What do these people need? You know, people are taking advantage of shelters both in Cle Elum and in Ellensburg at Central Washington. And, you know, there's also been some 200 horses and other livestock and other animals who have been evacuated, that have been evacuated as well. And many of them they're safe, but a lot of them are being reunited with their owners now. There is one story of a dog that was found on a ridge line that we were up at yesterday. They had to leave the dog behind. It has burn marks on its one of its paws.
I saw the picture of that dog. It was the scorched paws. It just broke my heart.
Yeah, very sad, and we don't know yet. It's at the animal hospital, and the firefighters scooped it up, and we don't know yet if it's been returned to the owners. So if you think you lost your dog up on that ridge line yesterday, he's waiting for you.
KMFR's Luke Ducey covering the fire, the wildfire burning out of control near Cle Elum, and I heard Department of Natural Resources is now confirming that this wildfire has been caused by people. Are they saying whether it's accidental or intentional, or just saying, okay, we know man-made,
and that's as far as they'll go. And we know two things that you know, yesterday we were able to confirm, of course, that this started at the bridge that's under construction along Route 10, the Taylor Bridge. And of course, this is called the Taylor Bridge Fire. So we know it started there, and now we know that somebody, at least one person, started this. You know, maybe more. We don't know if it was an accident. Or if it was, you'd hate to think that it was intentional, but certainly somebody started this fire. And to think how much damage it's caused, that's awesome. That's an awesome responsibility.
There are some community meetings, too, today, tonight, for the folks there or for other people. What are those about?
Yeah, 4 o'clock tonight, informational meetings. If you're in the area, if you're anybody and you want information about the fire, you want information about evacuations, when can I go back to my home? Now is the time to go to at 4 p.m. at the Cle Elum Roslyn High School Gymnasium. They're going to have one of these informational meetings. And then also at 7 p.m. down in Ellensburg at the Central Washington University. I'm blank. Their residential hall. You know, they're like.
Oh, the recreation, the student recreation, yeah. Student union area.
Thank you. Student.
Okay.
Yeah. But meeting there at 7.
But I'm wondering, do they want us to drop off items there, or is this just for people to gather information? It's not for us to drop off donations.
Great question.
Want us to get clarity on that for you?
We'll get clarity, but you know what? I would say if you have something, why not? There are going to be officials there, and they'll tell you where to go if not. But, yeah, certainly, why not?
Yeah, well, appreciate your information, Luke. Thank you for keeping us up to date on this fire. It's just a sad situation, and it seems to not be able to get under control. And we hope those weather conditions improve because they need that help. KMFR's Luke Ducey.
You've heard what's happening. Now, find out what it means to you. Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on KMO News Radio.
Alisa Jaffe in this afternoon for Ken Schramm. Good to have you with us. We were just talking to KMFR's Luke Ducey about that out-of-control wildfire near Cle Elum, and it's roughly the size of Tacoma. Can you imagine to see a fire like that coming at the homes, 70 homes destroyed, animals, people evacuated? We've got about 500 firefighters on the ground battling the blaze. The National Guard is there as well, and the Red Cross is doing what it can to try to help out the people. Donations are pouring in for fire victims, and there are volunteers offering all kinds of help on message boards and on Facebook. And Lisa Reinhart is with the Yakima and Kittitas County chapter of the Red Cross. And Lisa, we want to know what we can do to help.
What we're really asking the community to do is to pull together and help make a financial donation to the Red Cross so that we have the resources readily available so that when we need to go out and support these displaced citizens that we have what we need.
How many people do you have to house right now?
Right now we have two shelters open. We have one in Cle Elum and we have one on the campus of Central Washington.
And how many families are we talking about? I know 70 homes. That could mean a lot more people than that, though. What do you have?
Absolutely. Well, right now they are trickling in and they are filling out and registering with us. We don't have an exact count, but what we've been told is that there's over 1,000 people that have been evacuated. So many of those evacuations are because their homes have been burned and they are displaced.
And when you say to make a financial donation, that's a lot easier because you have the resources to be able to get things at a better rate than us, or you know what their needs are. Is that why you're asking that?
Yeah, that's exactly right. That is exactly right. You got it.
How do we know when we're making a donation, if we go online and make a donation to the Red Cross, how do we know it's going to be specifically helping these victims of this fire?
Well, there's a couple different ways. One is that we always honor donor intent. So if you're on the computer, there is a space there that you can say that this can help the victims of the Taylor Bridge fire.
Okay.
But additionally, there are over 60 fires burning right now in the Northwest. And the American Red Cross is helping with most all of them. So, you know, it may just be a donation to help the wildfire victims.
Oh, my goodness.
Everybody is in need right now.
How is social media changing the game for you with this?
Well, in a good way, it's definitely spreading information quicker. But then we also have some situations where people are posting things that are inaccurate.
Like what? So, clear it up for us.
Pardon me?
Clear it up for us. What's inaccurate?
What is inaccurate is that we are not accepting clothes or household items. We are not. There may be some other organizations within the communities that are, but we do not accept those kind of items. We accept strictly a financial donation.
Okay, and I didn't know that. But there are other volunteers and community groups who may be doing that, who may be showing up at the community meetings tonight, but it's just not. That's not what the Red Cross is doing.
That's not what we're doing. No, that is not what we're doing. Nope.
Tell me what the families are going through. You're probably come in contact with these people who have just lost everything and in shock.
You know what? And right now, it is shock. And I think that they're overwhelmed. And a lot of these people out here are pretty self-sufficient and proud people.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's hard for them to take a handout. Some of these people, you know, literally had 2 minutes to get ready to jump in their car to evacuate. You know, what they were most concerned about was their livestock and their animals. We have animal shelters here, and they're filled. And so really, as they wake up and they realize what has actually happened to them, I think they're coming into a better reality. But yesterday, it was horrible to look into their eyes. And when they say, our house burned, we have nothing left, it makes you want to cry.
Yeah, and it's not just their home. It's then their livelihood when you're talking about their livestock.
Yes.
That's everything for them.
Yes.
And you say you have animal shelters. How many animals have you taken in?
Well, the Red Cross doesn't have, but the community does. And so they have at the rodeo fairgrounds probably 300 horses and llamas and ostriches. And then some of the veterinarian places around here are taking in the smaller animals like cats and dogs and turtles and birds.
Wow.
So I mean, everybody's kind of sort of filling a niche and a need here in this community. And it's really neighbors pitching in and helping neighbors. It has been heartwarming. It has been hard to watch because so many homes have been lost, but it's also been so heartwarming to see everybody pitch in and help each other out.
The website, Lisa?
www.redcross.org.
We'll do what we can, and our best to you. Our prayers to the families. Thank you very much, Lisa Reinhart, from the Red Cross in Yakima and Kittitas County.
Time to discuss, dissect, and debate the news. Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
It's 12:29. Alisa Jaffe in for Ken Schramm, and maybe I won't come in tomorrow because maybe I'll become a multimillionaire. But I got to buy a lotto ticket first. Yes, tonight's Powerball drawing could make one of you very, very rich. $320 million is the big lottery jackpot up for grabs. You can play your birthday. Some people play their anniversaries or do what I do. Just let the machine pick those random numbers. But $320 million at stake in tonight's big Powerball jackpot.
Como News Radio, everything you need to know. Now, Newsline with Ken Schramm.
It's 12:35. Alisa Jaffe in this afternoon for Ken Schramm, taking a few well-deserved days off. Gorgeous afternoon out there. We are just hearing, as you heard from Nancy Burke just a second ago, about the family of that young girl, that 8-year-old Amina Bowman, now suing the school district, the Bremerton School District, for $10 million, a $10 million claim. You got to remember how heartbreaking this was. That 8-year-old goes to school and typical average day, and all of a sudden a gun in one of her classmates' backpacks goes off. And she nearly died. I mean, she has required numerous surgeries, and she's going to suffer these injuries for the rest of her life. And the attorney for Amina Bowman's family is with us right now, Jeffrey Campiche. Thank you for being with us, Mr. Campiche. Appreciate it. Why don't you tell us why you are suing the Bremerton School District when it was the little boy who had the backpack?
Well, we're suing the parents of the little boy and the guardian of the little boy, and the Bremerton School District. Each of them are responsible for the boy being allowed to have a loaded firearm in the classroom.
Go into the details of that, why you say each of them responsible. Break it down from your thoughts.
Well, first, the two of the parents, the natural parents of the child, were declared unfit by the court and restricted from having access to the child. But in fact, they became, when their grandmother of the children adopted the children, the parents were right back in the parenting role. The father continued to parent, and then the child would visit the mother and her boyfriend, stay in their home over the weekends, and they're the ones that provided the boy with the gun. They're the ones that let the boy believe that it was okay to use a firearm for protection.
How so?
They were the well, they had five or six loaded semionic firearms laying around the house when the police did the search. They were available to the child. They were part of their culture in that household, that you can use weapons to defend yourself.
Against bullying? It wasn't that one of the things that you were talking about also?
And that's why the school district's one of the named parties, that they had lots of bullying in the school and didn't take the right a response to it that would have protected the children. The boy felt he had to bring a weapon to school to protect himself from being beat up by bigger kids. And that's why he brought the gun.
And how did the school district know that the boy was feeling bullied?
Oh, indeed they did. They'd actually suspended him for participating in it. They had plenty of knowledge of that.
What is the family going through now, and how can $10 million even help this family?
Well, first off, the family's trying to help the girl get out of the house, get back into the community, get back into school, overcome her pain that she has constantly, and to be successful, to overcome all of the disabilities that are the result of the wounds that she got, which were pretty extensive.
Because this bullet pierced through her organs and lodged in her spine. So what are the long-term disabilities that she's facing because of this horrible tragedy?
The first and foremost are the fact that she's now a kind of a changed child psychologically. That when you're gunned down in a place like a school classroom, you suffer quite a bit of psychological consequences just because you felt you were safe and suddenly you weren't. And so what we're seeking is accountability of both the adults that were responsible for the child, responsible for letting him have a gun, failing to supervise him, and then we're seeking to place accountability on the school for not having an adequate system in place to guard against bullying, to protect the children from this sort of violence, but also to identify those children that are at risk for participating in bullying or this kind of violence, and intervene and stop them.
Jeffrey Campiche is the attorney for Amina Bowman's family. What I guess I don't understand. How could the school district have known, unless they had metal detectors, that this little boy was going to bring a gun in his backpack to school?
Well, I don't think that they knew he was going to bring a gun in the backpack by metal detectors, the question. First and foremost, a large number of children in that school had heard him say he was going to get a gun and use it as protection against the boys. Had the school a system in place where the children reported such things, or had the children been instructed and encouraged, and had the atmosphere in the school been different, then they would have got that report. But they also had information that other weapons were being brought to the school and did nothing. So maybe not nothing. Maybe they just didn't do what they had to do. And that's what the jury's going to determine. They're going to determine whether or not the Bremerton School District complied with the standards in the nation and in the state for people who are responsible for our children's safety when they're in their care.
Because you want your kid to go to school and you don't want them to think that there's going to be a gun in a backpack. You know, that's a given, but this is a tough one because of all the other elements with this family involved.
Well, you know, I don't think it's a tough one. I think it's rather straightforward. There was lots of information of Boeing, lots of information that there was going to be weapons and violence, and the school didn't respond to it appropriately. I don't think it's that tough, but we'll find out, and that's what the jury will determine. We're just starting the case, but the information we have is much different than the information that was out in the press before today.
Well,
such as,
yeah, what have you learned that we didn't hear before? What's new?
Well, a number of children knew that the boy said he was going to bring a handgun to the school. That the boy was involved in a number of bullying events, both as a victim and as a perpetrator. They knew that the child had significant family problems. All these things they knew or could have known, too. Another kid who brought weapons to school. And then when you look at the families, they didn't just have a gun or two around the house. They had a virtual arsenal of loaded semi-automatic firearms designed to kill people. The bullet used is the .45 caliber shock hollow point. That's what the gun was loaded with. There were other guns in the house. There was a loaded pump shotgun, 12-gauge shotgun with 8 cartridges in it, double-aught buck and slugs, not for hunting pheasants. Those are for shooting people. There were 3 other semi-automatic handguns around the house and in the car in the glove box. The child was allowed to go to that house unsupervised by the guardian, and there he was told that we have these kind of guns for protection.
No, but if you're suing these families who I don't know their financial situation, but I'm banking that they don't have a lot of money, is that why you end up having to sue the school district as well? Because you can't really get it out of a turnip if you're going after a family that doesn't have any money.
I think it's a question of responsibility. You can only bring a claim against a party who is in part responsible for the harms and losses your client has. So it's not just because somebody has money that we sue them. We sue them because we believe they bear responsibility for what happened. And they have a moral and a legal obligation to share in the loss that the child and her family suffered.
Jeffrey Campisi, yes.
If there isn't responsibility, there won't be a lawsuit.
Thank you, Jeffrey, for being with us. Jeffrey Campisi, the attorney for Amina Bowman's family, and the family is now filing a $10 million claim against the Bremerton School District.
This is Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
Good afternoon. It's 11 before 1. Elisa Jaffe in for Ken Schramm this afternoon. Have you heard what they're doing to the packages of cigarettes over in Australia? It's incredible what they're doing. The highest court there has upheld a law today that prohibits tobacco companies from using their own logos on cigarette packs. But that means that on these packs, smokers could start to see these more graphic images associated with their habit. Pictures of blistered, cancer-stricken mouths, children who are sickly from secondhand smoke, limbs with gangrene. They're saying this is what could end up being on the packs of cigarettes. Would that impact you if you picked up a pack of cigarettes and saw that on it instead of just the name of the brand? Well, we've got Andrew Strasser with us, and Andrew is an associate professor with the Department of Psychiatry at Penn, at University of Pennsylvania, and he has studied this. You've studied the research on what is on the labels and the graphic warnings and how they affect smokers. So first, let's begin with what you think about what Australia's highest court has done.
Well, you know, I think it's a good first step, and I'm encouraged to see that the law was upheld. I mean, I think two things are important. One is the size of the graphic warning labels that are going to be adopted on the packaging prevents a lot of sort of extra space, if you will, for the industry to use. And then sort of the second punch is the fact that it has to now be plain packaging. I think is very encouraging, the two aspects together.
Because aren't they talking about just like a plain army green logo?
That's exactly right. It's sort of an olive green color and tight control over the font size that can be used. But we know from scientific research and also some of the research that's come out of the tobacco industry that the packaging has a profound effect on the beliefs or risk perception of a product, and that in turn can have an effect on the decision whether to use the product if you're a youth or adolescent, to not quit, or to choose a version of the product that can be perceived as potentially less hazardous. And you know, so for example, the light cigarette phenomena that we had for 40 years in the United States. So the plain packaging sort of neutralizes the playing field for implicit argument or implicit messaging by the industry.
Because I know packaging makes a difference if I'm buying a hair product or a moisturizer or, you know, picking which soup I want. But when it comes to cigarettes, and if you suddenly pick up a pack of cigarettes and it's got a mouth that you can tell has been, you know, destroyed by cancer, that's going to make a big difference, isn't it? Don't you hope, or don't you think?
I certainly do. And one of the arguments that the tobacco industry has stated is that you know these are you know sort of too graphic, and people are going to not pay attention to them. But some of the research that we've conducted in our laboratory, we actually find we use an eye tracking system where we can measure how quickly and for how long people view the different pieces of the warning label, so the graphic and the larger text and the supplemental text and different manipulations. And what we found through several studies is the longer that someone views the graphic image, the better they are at recalling what the health risk read. So it sort of gives them a chance to maybe process the message that's being conveyed to them. So the graphic images are important.
So that would make more difference maybe than if it's just a tiny line that said cigarettes cause lung cancer. If it was something big and an image, that kind of warning label might have a stronger impact on young people being tempted.
That's right. It sort of conveys two messages. So you have a health warning that's text, but then you also have some graphic image that will, you know, first maybe gain your attention, but then also give you a visual proof or visual supplement to, you know, this is what we mean by developing lung cancer or developing cardiovascular disease. You're, in a sense, you're given two messages, both a visual message and a text message.
And we've
shown that these are effective.
I know some people are cheering and some people are jeering this, but quickly, do you think this will have global ramifications? Do you think this could come over to the United States?
Well, I'm optimistic. I think it's a move in the right direction. This is the first time this has happened globally, but every country's a little different. And so even with the graphic warning labels that the FDA has proposed to be used in the United States, they've been held up with First Amendment rights. And I would imagine the tobacco industry would use similar First Amendment rights to not have their design and colors and features and name brand withheld from their product. So I suspect it'll be different because of some of the different legal climates.
You betcha. Andrew Strasser, thank you for being with us from the University of Pennsylvania.
Time to discuss, dissect, and debate the news. Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
So we just got the warning about the box of cigarettes and what's on there and what it says will make a difference. And now we're being warned about egg yolks, that a new study saying for those of us who are over 40 years old, the number of egg yolks we consume per week can accelerate the thickening of our arteries almost as severely as does smoking cigarettes. But they're still a good source of balanced protein. You just want to think about using them in moderation. Think about that as you have your egg salad sandwich for lunch.